United States v. Hicks. Mr. McGowan.
May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Andrew McGowan. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Kevin Hicks. Mr. Hicks appeals the District Court's denial of his motion to suppress the gun police found on his person while responding to a 911 call. The question before this Court is whether the officer had reasonable suspicion to seize Mr. Hicks. Without the information from the caller, the officer did not see an illegal act that the officer knew was illegal as it was happening. And the question is, how much can the officer rely on the information provided by the caller? This Court has found that a 911 call is presumptively reliable. However, in this case, as we know in retrospect, everything that the caller was saying, almost everything, was a complete lie.
So the fault is the dispatcher's, presumably, not the officer, the arresting officer.
I don't know if I'd actually say there was a fault, necessarily. The system worked as it was supposed to in terms of getting an officer to a scene. There wasn't much time, and the call was short. However, during the call, of course,
Well, I don't understand you. So where is the violation? Is it the dispatcher, the police officer, someone else?
The question is whether the officer had a reasonable suspicion. I'm saying based on the facts of this case, he did not, because he could not rely on the caller.
What do you mean he couldn't rely? What could he rely on? What's he supposed to do? Supposed to interrogate the dispatcher or what? What's he supposed to do?
Well, when he arrives, for instance, and the caller, who's on the phone at the time, says, he's all right.
So wait a second. Look. I don't understand. I could understand if you treated the dispatcher and the police officer as a unit, the government or something like that. But if your view is that all we look at is whether the officer was acting reasonably on the basis of what he knew, then the fact that the caller should have, alerted the suspicion of the dispatcher, that would drop out of the case.
Well, I'm trying to incorporate not only this court's ruling, but...
I don't understand what you're talking about, actually. Well, is it your view that the dispatcher violated the Fourth Amendment, or the dispatcher precipitated a violation of the Fourth Amendment, or what?
I'm saying that relying on this presumption in this case would be a violation of Mr. Hicks'
presumption of what?
Look, what are you talking about?
The presumption of reliability.
Just explain, what is the Fourth Amendment violation here?
The Fourth Amendment violation is the officer's seizure of Mr. Hicks without reasonable suspicion.
And the fault, in your view, surely is the dispatcher, right? The dispatcher was too credulous in directing the officer to the scene? Is that
actually
true?
The dispatcher, through the phone call, actually asked several questions that questioned the information that the caller was providing and did not relay that to the officer.
So is that the violation, that the 9/11 dispatcher's failure to give good information to the officer? Is that the violation?
That would be part of it.
What's the other part?
The other part of it was when the officer arrives, the caller tells him he's all right. To my mind, it should raise a question in the policeman's
mind.
So
what's the officer supposed to do at that point?
Ask him what he's talking about.
He's got the 9/11 information. Now he's got the caller talking to him inconsistently. What's he supposed to do?
The information is...
What is he supposed to do?
He's supposed to ask the caller what he meant by he's all right. First of all, the incident seems to have been over. It was supposed to have occurred in the house that they're neither of them in front of. I mean, when the officer arrives, the situation has dissipated.
It's over. There's no reason for the police officer to leave, right?
There's no reason why the police officer can't corroborate the information that he received from the dispatcher. And part of that may be talking to the caller.
Why should he trust the caller?
Because that's the only information that he has.
Look, if the dispatcher sends you, the police officer, this scene and says, there's an incident, there's a man with a gun, and so on. If the police officer goes and says, hey, do you have a gun? And the guy says, no. He says, oh, great. No problem. Right?
Well, of course.
That would make sense, would it?
It would make sense for the officer to corroborate the information that he received.
Wait, counsel. Didn't he have information that the man was dressed in all black?
Actually, that information was incorrect.
I said, did he have...
Yes, he did.
Right. Did he have information that he had a gun?
He did.
All right. Did he ask the man if he had a gun?
No, he did not.
He did not? Then why did the man turn the gun over?
He was seized at that point. The officer seized him, and I believe Mr. Hicks
didn't
told him he had a gun.
Didn't he ask the man, do you have a gun? And he said yes.
I believe my client told him he had a gun. Without, perhaps he did. Perhaps he did respond to the question, but my client did tell him he did have a gun before he took it from him. I apologize. My point also is that during the call, Mr. Woodbury, the caller, told the operator that he didn't have a gun near the end of it.
I know, but look... Suppose the caller says, doesn't say anything about a gun, and the 911 dispatcher mistakenly tells the police officer there's a person with a gun, and then the police officer seizes him. Now, the police officer is acting reasonably on the basis of what he knew. The dispatcher, no, was not. Now, is that a Fourth Amendment violation?
I think under the case law it is not.
Is not?
I believe it is not.
That's strange, isn't it?
It is very strange. And in fact, there's...
Why isn't the officer and the dispatcher, they're both police, if one... We have cases which say, if a police officer misinforms another police officer, that doesn't create Fourth Amendment immunity, does it?
My impression of the case law is that it's actually pretty lenient towards that kind of problem. Now, if there's a legal problem that's relayed, that's a little more question. In fact, before the Supreme Court, there's a question of an improper information about a warrant. And that may be removed from this case, but I think that
But that's different, right? If the magistrate issues a warrant mistakenly, the police rely in good faith, that's fine, but the magistrate is not part of the police department. But if one police officer tells another, if one police officer lies to another and the other then acts reasonably on the basis of what he knows, there's no problem?
Well, I think that's one of the problems.
It would make it very easy to circumvent the Fourth Amendment, wouldn't it?
I think that's one of the problems with the presumption of reliability of 911 calls.
Counsel, did you read the Brown case from this court?
The Brown case?
Yes.
No.
We conclude that it was reasonable for the police to further credit the information provided in an emergency 911 call because the caller is apparently seeking the protection and aid for a friend.
That's also what
Brown,
the court said.
The United States versus Brown, 496, Fed 3rd, 1070.
This court has also said that in Drake, and that's one of the cases that we
pardon me?
This court has also said that in Drake, which is one of the cases that both the government and I address. But this is one of the problems with the reliability of these 911 calls. In this case, it was a complete, utter, false account
That's
of what
true,
was going on.
That's true, but what are the police supposed to do? They can't just say, oh, I don't believe you, I think you're nuts or something.
No, but the remedy here is that the police have to corroborate.
Which police are we talking about?
The police who respond. All they have to do is corroborate some information. Reasonable suspicion is such a low standard. It doesn't take a whole lot. All they have to do is ask some questions. He could have asked the alleged victim in the house. He could have talked to the person who was right there with the phone. What are you talking about? What do you mean he's all right? Do you mean that he doesn't have a gun? Do you mean that there's no problem here? What are you talking about? That's all the officer had to do in my mind.
But he had a gun, and he owned up to having
it. Yes, he did. But the caller told the 911 operator near the end of the call that he did not have a gun. And in fact, he said...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Like I said, in the original part of the call, he said
at the end of the call, I'm thinking, when she asked her whether... Right?
He said, my impression when he said, I'm thinking, is like he didn't see it. And in fact, he referred to it as a pistol originally, and it was a revolver.
The other person's voice is in the background, right?
Yes, there are voices in the background.
So I would think the dispatcher would be acting prudently to tell the officer, there's a gun inside. You don't want the dispatcher, we've had these cases where dispatchers tell someone calls up, says he can't breathe, and the dispatcher says, oh, you know, and then the person dies. So we don't want dispatchers making discretionary calls. We want them to send whatever the person is asking for, I would think. Okay, thank you, Mr. McGowan. Mr. Kohler?
May it please the Court, Josh Kohler on behalf of the United States. This case began when a 911 operator around midnight received a phone call about a domestic disturbance involving a gun. Fortunately, protocol dictates that those calls are responded to immediately. And in this case, the police officer responded to that call. He was told that there was an incident involving a gun at a specific location. He arrived at that location, and what did he see? He saw and heard the defendant make an inculpatory statement, turning to the caller and saying, why did you do me like this? That justifies a Terry stop. The defendant then refused his commands to stop and proceeded to walk away.
He refused to do what?
The defendant then ignored the police officer's commands to stop, and he walked away from the police officer. That justified a Terry stop. The defendant then went into a house that was not his. That justified a Terry stop. And when you take the totality of all these circumstances, there is no question that the officer had reasonable, articulable facts in front of him to say that criminal activity was afoot. Counsel just indicated that the officer in this case, I believe the quote was, did not see an illegal act. That's not the test. The test is whether or not the officer had reasonable, articulable suspicion. And he did. The totality of the circumstances make that clear. And I'd like to touch on one other incident. The comment was made that everything the caller said was a lie. That's not true. What the caller said was true. When the caller said that there was a domestic disturbance, that was true. When the caller said that there was a gun, that was true. When the caller gave the exact location of the disturbance, that was true. And when the officer gets to the scene, and now the caller, when the defendant is right next to him, is minimizing what had happened, a natural assumption is that the caller may be afraid of the defendant, that the caller may be backing off of some of his statements because the defendant is right there. And the dispatcher in this case did nothing wrong. The dispatcher fielded the call, received information, and relayed that information to the police officer. And that information was corroborated. That information was corroborated when the address was exactly on point. That information was corroborated when the dispatcher was able to hear over the 911 call the caller speaking with the defendant. There was no reason at any point for the 911 dispatcher to do anything but make sure that the police arrived. Once the police arrived, there was nothing that called into question the fact that criminal activity was afoot and that Terry stop was justified. Beyond that, the government would rest on its brief if there are no questions from the court.
Thank you, Mr. Kohler. And Mr. McGowan, do you have anything further?
No.
Okay, well, thank you very much to the defenders and to the justices.